Hello, everyone.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
All right. How are you, Alex?
Doing pretty well, thanks.
So it looks like we're still waiting for a few people to join. We will get started shortly, but while we're waiting, I just want to cover the agenda. We still have a few walkthroughs to cover that we haven't been able to get to in the last 2 weeks. So I want to finish that up today. And then after that, we have a few presentations that have actually been sitting in the hopper for a few weeks. So I appreciate Stephen and Gil's patience while we work through the walkthroughs. We'll circle back to those later in the call. And we'll give everybody another minute. I think the previous meeting is just wrapping up. While we're waiting, for any of you, if you have topics that you'd like to discuss on a future call, I'm keeping the agenda through JIRA. So if you go into jira.onap.org and go to the board for the architecture committee, ARC meetings, and then if you add an issue into the ONAP architecture committee, it will show up on this Kanban board and we can prioritize it for future calls.
Chris, well, other people are coming. Can you very quickly describe us the structure here in the JIRA?
Yes. So the way I've broken it down is there are essentially three swim lanes. There's next call, and then 2 weeks, and then everything else. So when you add a ticket in Jira, then it shows up in the everything else pile. So it's backlog, in progress, and done. Backlog is waiting to be scheduled. In progress is already scheduled, and we're going to process it soon. And then done is once we complete the items. And the way that I'm doing the sorting is actually based on priority. So if it shows up as priority high, then it goes to 2 weeks, and priority highest, and it goes to next call.
Got it.
So when people submit, they come in as everything else, and then I'll go through and prioritize, and I'll try to get you scheduled as quickly as possible.
Cool.
Yep. Okay. Why don't we get started? I think we have critical mass now. And I'd like to get back to the walkthroughs. Is the portal team here? Can we cover portal next? Okay. Let's see. I see Dan on. Dan, do you want to do the SDNC walkthrough? I'll drop the sharing.
Sure. So let me share my screen. I'm not sure what I should really show you, but
there we go.
Okay, yeah, let me go to the sorry. Should have been prepared better. I'm trying to remember where we put the APIs. Here we are. Okay, so let me go to the SDNC one. Okay, so we have three inbound APIs for SDNC. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Just heard a buzzing there. I want to make sure that wasn't my okay, so we actually have, well, five inbound APIs, sort of. Three of them are RESTConf APIs. There's one called HealthCheck, which I have to be honest, I have to check to see who's using that. For here, I know that in the C code, the robot framework was using that to just do a health check to make sure the API was up. I'm not sure in this context if that would be OOM or who, but it's basically just a very simple API that just returns back success if everything is up and healthy, and failure if not. Generic DNF API is something that we're using for the VDNS and VFW virtual firewall use cases, and this was something that we carried forward from the OpenETOMP C code. It's not new. And the generic resource API is something new we're adding to support the Vault and VCP use cases. And this is the API that SO will use to assign resources, create, or basically set up the network connection and configure the device. And I have Swagger uploaded here. The Swagger is going to change a little bit because there's some additional parameters, additional APIs that we have to support for some of the new devices, and that wasn't in the original seed code, but we're working through those details, and that'll be available in the near future, probably this week for sure. Not sure if it'll be today or tomorrow, but soon. Okay, so those are our RESTConf APIs. We also have we're also receiving Kafka distributions from SDC, and for that we're just using the SDC client to subscribe to DMAP to get the events, and we're using Toad.sdc, the same client library, to actually parse the Kafka that we get. And then finally, there's a new thing that was added to listen for events from DMAP. Specifically, we're getting DHCP events when the BRG receives an IP address. Yeah, I have a little bit of detail here. What happens is when we get that, behind the scenes will invoke that same generic resource that I just talked about. Once you set up the WAN connection. It's just that instead of SO triggering that, it's going to be a DHCP event. Those are our incoming interfaces. Our outgoing interfaces, the two main ones are ANAI and we already have the access to schema for ANAI that we need for
Dan, I think we're losing you.
Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yes, your voice faded away for a minute.
Yeah, no, sorry. I probably just have to talk louder. So, voice over IP connection, yeah. So,
Dan, could you use the full screen, please?
I'm sorry?
Full screen is hard to read.
Oh, okay. Better?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that I talked about the DMAP listener, I talked about ANAI. And the last outgoing interface we have is to some external SDNC controllers. And some of those will be using RESTConf. One of those at least will be using NetConf. And we have adapters that we will be using for those. That's it. Those are our interfaces.
Okay. And could we could you click on the generic resource API? Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the most beautiful thing you ever saw.
Sure. And also, did you say that was still changing? You know, now that we're at the M3, everything's supposed to be locked down. Is that still a work in progress, or are you just updating the documentation?
We're just updating the documentation. I have the updated documentation, but I haven't uploaded it to the page yet. So let me show you this in a better way. Hold on a second.
Yeah, great.
Switch to Chrome. I've asked the Linux Foundation to load a plugin for me that would let me display the JSON, the Swagger JSON directly. I'm not sure if that's done yet, but I can do it. I can show it to you.
Okay.
Great. This is the same thing I just uploaded. It's just a nicer way to look at it. Seconds. And all the stuff in the beginning, these are our internal data structures. They're closed if people want to read them, but don't know that anybody really plans to. So I'm going to scroll down to the bottom and show you the actual RPC calls that people use.
Great.
So, okay, so these are the RPC calls that people will be using. And the only thing that really is going to change is, do you see there's an RPC call here called like contrail route topology operation. There's another one called security zone topology operation. There's going to be another one called, I can't get the name of it off the top of my head, but it's another type of topology operation to set up a link. That's the only thing additional. It's just not in this, because I have it in the Word document. I haven't gotten it into the Swagger yet.
Okay. Great. Were there any questions for Dan?
I have a question. Dan, can you go back to the main page?
Sure.
So, regarding the generic VNF API, what does it exactly entail? When say request, is it requesting compute resources, or what is it doing? The generic VNF API.
Mainly, what that does for the VDNF, for the two use cases it supports, is there's kind of two classes of interfaces that it supports. One is preload data, which is sort of a design time activity where you go and you preload resources for the VNFs you want to support. And then there's another set of APIs where you go and you request the resources. So the generic VNF, those two use cases, it's not the existing controller isn't really configuring anything, it's just assigning resources. And the way it assigns them is pretty simplistic. If you preload basically everything you would need for, you know, n number of VNFs, which, you know, however many you want to pick. And then as you ask for assignments, it just says, okay, here's, you know, here's all, here's one instance of that, and I'm going to mark it in use.
Hey, John, Parviz, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, the generic VNF is the existing code. There is no need to, in ONAV, to touch the code, correct?
That's correct.
But the generic resource API for multi and CPE use cases, we need to touch the code and add certain parameters and so on and so forth.
Right. Right.
So Dan, my only confusion is the, I mean, when you said resources, for example, SO is the one requesting, for example, the compute resources by talking directly to multi-cloud, right? For a specific compute resources. And this is a, this resource is just, I mean, kind of a representation in SDNC then?
Yeah, usually the way the flow works is that before SO like spins up the VNF, they'll do an assign request to SDNC to assign resources so that when they spin up the, when they execute the heat template, they can kind of fill in the blanks of what assignments they need. But that's the usual model.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, and then with the heat template, it contact SO contacts the multi-cloud, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I see. Well, but this is right now used in only in the path of VDNS and virtual firewall, the generic VNF API, not used in the ulti path, just to confirm.
Right.
Okay.
Right, right. For the other two use cases, the generic VNF won't be used. The generic resource is a little bit more flexible.
Got it. Yeah, now it makes sense. Yeah.
And the one main difference I'll tell you between the generic VNF and generic resource is the generic resource API is smart enough to use the Kafka model. So the generic resource API is smart enough to say, ah, okay, this is a VNF of type, you know, XYZ, and I know from Kafka what resources it is, so, gotcha.
Hey, Dan?
Yep.
You also have the DHCP involved for IP address allocation, no? In the existing code?
Yep, that's down here.
You have it here?
No. Yeah, so that's the thing I highlighted here. So the way that'll work is that the DHCP, they'll have a hook to trigger a DMAP, an event on DMAP. And then we'll receive that event and translate that to a call to generic resource API internally. So we have kind of a generic DMAP listener that can be configured to just say, hey, when you get an event and, you know, do a little bit of pattern matching to map the event back to what you need to do when you get it.
So here the question is, for example, for VoLTE, the SDNC doesn't directly see most of the devices on the data plane. It would need to pass some parameters to the controller, correct?
I'm sorry, you got cut off. You need to pass some parameters too, and then that part got cut off.
Yeah, the SDNC, it talks downstream to the third-party controller.
Correct.
So some of those parameters are not used directly by the device. It has to pass it to the third-party controller to consume those parameters.
Right.
So is that, have you separated those set of parameters? These are all consumed by the MAN controller and the third-party controller in the data center, whether it's in the edge or in the core. Those are all
That's all controlled by the directed graphs within the SDN controller. So when SO invokes the generic resource API, let's say to, let me flip back to that other one a second, I'll look if I can find it. Okay. So when they invoke the, say, network topology operation, the network topology operation has three actions. It has assign, create, and activate. So when it does a create, I think that's typically when it would establish the network connections, things like that. And when that network topology operation is invoked, it goes down a directed graph that says, okay, what's the action? Is the action assign, create, or activate? If it's create, it goes down a directed graph that handles the create, and then it looks at the network technology, I think it's called, figure out what type of network. And that's where it would branch off to say, oh, okay, well, if the network technology is whatever we encode for the different third-party controllers that we're supporting, it would go off and do the logic to talk to that third-party controller.
Do we have an example call flow using the DG somewhere in the document? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, let me, I'm sure I have that. I can post that.
You don't have to do it here, but.
Yeah, I can post that.
Yeah. Great, thank you. Anything else for Dan?
Just one quick question, Sigil asks here, regarding the API dependency, Dan. So SDNC, according to what is documented in the project planning, rely on ANI and SDC, only those two, that's correct?
Yeah, the only other thing we have to add is DMAT. That was added later. And I think I don't remember if I updated that in the...
Yes, please.
I'll add that.
Yeah, and please let me know, okay?
Okay.
Also, those empty repository looks like architecture and features are still empty. Is there a plan? Are those repos in the scope for R1?
No, we don't need those for Amsterdam.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Any final questions? Okay, thank you, Dan. Appreciate the review.
Sorry, one very quick one. The ANA APIs cover completely the scope of ESR interaction for third-party controllers too?
I'm not sure if I'll...
For the third-party controllers, managing third-party controllers, the ANAI will... basically you'll access ESR, interface of ANAI, correct? And that part is already covered, correct?
Yeah. Well, ESR is new, but we will be able to talk to it. Kind of the way our ANAI adapter works, it just sucks in the XSD schema and generates all the code to support all the interfaces. So we'll be able to talk to ESR.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. Why don't we go on to the next presentation? Portal, do we have Manoop or someone else for the Portal team online? How about OOM, David? AAF, Ram, are you on the call? Or someone from AAF team? And how about logging, Luke? Okay, we'll have to circle back for them. Why don't we go on to John Quilty from Ericsson? to talk about a potential next level of detail. And then we'll go on from there.
Okay, I guess the slides were done by Steve, but I'll try and do them some justice, see if I can fully understand what he was planning to say. How do I? Sorry, no, I haven't shared before. I don't. Can you see the my screen?
Yes.
These are the slides. I'm using the slide set that. Oops, I have two screens. Sorry, it's. I'm going to presentation mode. It seems to switch to the other one.
Sorry to bother while you are getting ready. There is some background noise I keep hearing. Could someone put on mute? Or am I the only one hearing that?
No, Gil, I'm hearing as well. I'm not sure where it's coming from there.
Let me mute everybody, and then I'll unmute John. If you want to speak, then unmute yourself.
Great, thank you.
Okay,
let's try that.
These are the slides that Steve had uploaded onto the architecture subcommittee page. Some of them might be a bit outdated with some, and these are some presentations have been updated, but these are just some of his reflections on the current R2 architecture, some proposed modifications, and I guess the discussion on the layered orchestration has already occurred, maybe. Discussion on the next level of detail. Do you want me just to skip to the next level of detail, or do you want to go through his reflections on the architecture?
Sure. Steve has covered the reflections on the architecture before, but we haven't gotten to the next level of detail. If we want to focus on that for now,
when he was thinking the next level of detail, it's, I guess, the ONAP architecture itself is quite large and has quite a detailed number of components. And actually, it's quite what he was proposing to do next is quite related to the activities that have been going on previous to this in this meeting and the last meeting. And that's trying to identify the interfaces. And also, I guess, from an architectural perspective, we need to have some control over the interfaces between the main components. So he was proposing that we provide a high level definition of the functionality of each of the components and then try and provide interface descriptions. And I guess you want the components to be as free as possible to evolve, but you want to be able to guarantee that they all work together at the same time. So we need to start maybe identifying, and from an architecture subcommittee, controlling to some extent the definitions of the provided interfaces between the main components within the architecture. I guess any interfaces between smaller components, it's the responsibility of that area. But just to get the thing working and make sure it works, we need to define the interfaces that are provided, the APIs. And Steve had just given this as an example template of how we might do it, that we don't need to go into necessarily a huge amount of detail, but we need to be clear on what the purpose of each interface supplying entity is, what those interfaces are, what they do and what they don't do, and just identify the consumers so we can have some dependency tracking. And he's also proposing that we might consider exposing some of the consumed models as well.
Is this being debated, or are we basically saying this is what we're going to do?
Oh, no, it's for discussion.
This is a proposal.
It's a proposal. Yeah.
So I'm curious where the microservice bus is in all of this. And why wouldn't we be using the microservice architecture to enable that integrative nature of ONAP while retaining, you know, the ability to develop each component or each set of microservices independently, right? And why wouldn't we integrate everything together based on a shared model, right? Doing model-driven integration that's been around for a long time. Because then you don't have to define interfaces between components. You define what operations are performed on what managed objects inside the model in different functions. So different microservices essentially act as providers of those.
But that's what an interface is. An interface has a transport mechanism. It has a set of operations or APIs, and it has a model connected to it.
So you're proposing that we define that shared state of that model as well?
You should only control the... We need to publish the interfaces that are important for other users, but you don't want to have total lockdown on it either for innovation, but you don't want to be having someone making changes or undocumented behavior. You can keep the API call consistent, but if you change the model, you break it for users who are dependent on the previous version.
It depends on how you define the model, right?
Yes.
But let's, if we look at ONAP as a blank box, right? There's the external view of what it does. And that ought to be based on some sort of model that we expose for integration and purposes and interoperation purposes. Then inside, you know, to integrate different parts of ONAP together, we might want to build a different model, which is, you know, more internal to ONAP. If we define it again, the interfaces are not I get the functional part, but it might be useful to start by defining the pattern where each function becomes a provider of something in the context of a set of managed objects. And maybe we just, you know, double click on this and kind of refine this. This is obviously not a bad way of documenting things, but it seems like we're missing out on this. We kind of leapt from an architecture view of release to down into the gory details of functional interface.
But you don't. There's different levels of functional interface, but you need to have some level, particularly for make life easier when it comes to integration, to have understanding and control of the key functional interfaces between the key components in the higher level of the architecture.
Yes.
And again, then within the lower levels, the project will naturally iterate down and define the key interfaces between the components within a project. But there is a number of problems today with trying to integrate stuff and finding that something works or doesn't work. There's a new release and it may or may not have the same or working interface.
So maybe we need a little bit of a taxonomy here too, right? Maybe we can talk about project private interfaces versus project public, right? And if we can maybe what happens within a project between you know is probably less important than what happens at the public interface endpoint, right?
Yeah. I mean, within a project you should have a lot more freedom to change interfaces on the fly within the project if it's the dependencies are only within the project.
Alex, can I give you an action item on that to put together your proposal for a future call?
I not formally, but yes, I will do that. I will refine. Okay. I'll focus on this, kind of refine this. I'll try to work off of this presentation.
Yeah, and there's different forms of. Yeah, I'm not sure if we're probably thinking of APIs slightly differently as well. I guess there's different ways you can expose the API.
Are you familiar with the business service integration patterns, or the equivalent that was done in Java, where you basically define a set of business objects and integrate all the components against them? They become basically web services that operate on the objects.
But you still then had to version control those services.
You do, and that's the beauty of the microservice process, that you can have different versions operating on things at the same time, and you can enable and disable services on the bus as you see fit.
Yes. But you still had to understand that function A provided version 1 and function B provided version 2.0, and that they were not compatible.
You can keep that as part of the model, right? You can define multiple providers for a create operation on something called a virtual machine, right?
Yeah. So, like, if you think in the microservice model, it might actually be two different microservices if the version changes significantly, because the functional role of the microservice might have changed. Because microservice is supposed to do one thing well.
Well, you should be able to support refactoring, right? You know, you can take an existing piece of code and then put facades in front of it, and it should still work. Yeah. But, so there's been some, you know, in the external API group, we've been thinking about how we take the beginnings of the model that we're cooking from the external interaction perspective, and what would that be like if we were to continue kind of, you know, we would kind of use that model as a way of operating on things within our app. So we need to connect the dots, I think. So Chris, I will try to come up with something for next time.
Because you could almost think of the slide that Steve has here as just being the specification for a microservice.
But see, microservices make up larger functional components, right? They're not, you know, we simply created this vision that, you know, each functional component is a single microservice. But, you know, you may have projects that might have multiple tiers or layers or interacting components.
But then you group those microservices and their interfaces becomes the grouping of their interfaces becomes the interface that's caused by the larger component.
Either a grouping or an abstraction, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was just an idea that Steve has.
One thing to kind of just keep in mind is, so there is a separate project called Microservices Bus, but if you really look deep down, a lot of the functionality is provided by Kubernetes, which is actually, emerging to be one of the favorite deployment models, right, through OOM. So something to keep in mind as you put it all together. So while it's basically whatever MSB can offer, I think most of it is already covered in Kubernetes, endpoints, everything, all the flexibility is there. So,
but we don't want to be locked down to one particular...
Oh, I don't know. Alex, I'm completely with you. All I'm just saying is basically we just need to consider all the options since Kubernetes is a pop.
Well, I mean, if we want to consider all the options, there's already open source implementations of a full microservice infrastructure that would be integrative, would handle multiple versions, and would do most of what we're talking about in terms of architectural principles. It's called the Netflix open source. We could just take that as the infrastructure and move ahead. And that's completely agnostic of, you know, how you deploy it. So I'll throw that on the table as well. We should at least be inspired by what they provide, if not use some of the components.
Yeah, sure. And we can then map it back to, you know, specific deployment option. So that makes sense.
That's a level of detail in functional our interface specification below the functional capabilities.
Yes and no, right? Because they also use that high order pattern to establish relationships between functional components, whether those components are microservice based or not is really not that
common. Yeah, but it has to be aware of the functional interface to find the certain capabilities being provided by those components when it's to meet them together. And that's the higher level definition.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else for John? Oh, yes, go ahead.
Chris?
Yes, Parviz.
I guess I have a problem with audio. I tried to dial in the meeting ID doesn't work. So the interface, the definition of interface for ONAP versus API. Chris, in your architecture discussion, do you distinguish these two? There is a difference. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there are different ways of providing interfaces between the components.
No. The difference between interface and API. So we need to make sure.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, Parviz. I'm sorry. There's some background noise. Can you try again?
Yeah, okay. I'll try to dial in again. Okay.
Okay, while Parviz is dialing, any other questions for John?
I guess we could talk about the first level of interface definition is just on the functional capabilities. And I guess whether it's an API, a RESTful API, plus that's another level of detail down. Okay. I think was that maybe what he was saying, that API is a particular type of interface?
Well, yes. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, we shouldn't be limiting things to programmatic interfaces. We have in a lot of cases declarative metadata that could be used as the interface or shared knowledge about something that. Or just shared access to, so we kind of need to think about both. I think ideally, I'll give you an example, right? That infamous Tosca template that we keep talking about that defines what a network service looks like in terms of topology. Ideally, that template also guides the behavior of day two operations and remediation functions and how to instantiate things in the first place, and then a bunch of other stuff as well. But it's sort of a shared way of looking at something in terms of its representation and resources.
Okay. Any final thoughts on this presentation? Okay, John, thank you very much. Okay.
All right, I'll stop sharing there.
And I did see two projects responded that they want to do their walkthroughs. Let's see, did I see Luke Parker on the call?
Yeah, hey guys. I'm sorry, I got your email. That's why I'm here. I must confess, I didn't know what this is about, and I didn't know that it was right now. And I'm sandwiched between meetings. I've got to drop to go to something else. So I don't have a deck. If you give me a 20-second rundown on what you'd like me to talk about, I can give you anywhere between a 1 minute and a 20-minute tirade on what we're doing. I'm sorry that it's so disorganized.
Yes,
but I didn't catch the beginning to see other people's either, so I didn't even have that context. So I'm really sorry.
Sure. So we're as part of the M3 milestone, we are checking everybody's APIs and checking alignment between the projects to make sure that what you're providing is what other people are consuming, and vice versa. And so we would just like a quick rundown of the APIs that you're providing and APIs that you're consuming and how you're interfacing with other projects.
Yeah, sure. So we are, this is going to replay a little what I said in the M4 review the other day. We're an unusual project and we're not really providing any, or we're not providing any of our own, and we're going to great pains not to change any external APIs. So what we're doing is bolting an analytics pipeline onto ONAP and deploying it automatically using OOM, so pre-configured pipeline, pre-configured indexing, pre-configured output, which means sort of trying to harmonize all of the provider configurations so we get uniform output, writing all of the indexing configuration and so on to gobble it into Elasticsearch so that it's visible via Kibana. And that exposes APIs, so that uses APIs, because obviously logging uses APIs, and there's an abstraction called ELF, which most people log through. And those we're not touching. The only new API that we expose is the Elasticsearch API, which is REST and it's third party. So there's certainly opportunities there. We've talked about making changes to the contract for ELF to add things like markers. I mean, basically what we want to be able to do is get reliable, unambiguous call graphs out of the data set that we pass from logs. But we've avoided that more or less at all costs, just because this being cross-cutting, any change that we make to any of those public APIs has enormous ramifications and a lot of people who we would have to negotiate with. And there's no real need. I mean, there's no need for us to provide further abstractions on top of Elasticsearch, because the idea is that once the data is in there, people can do with it as they will, and we're doing certain things with it, and I'm sure other people will find other uses for it. I mean, most of the internal APIs, the logging provider APIs and so on, they've been stable for years and there's nothing really that we can add. ELF is a little bit of an anomaly because it's another layer of abstraction on top of SLF4J, which is already an abstraction. So I do think that makes us unusual. The other thing that we're producing, which again doesn't really pertain to APIs at all, is an updated set of guidelines for how people can produce useful diagnostics output. And that's not messages and so on. It's more about contextual information that gets included with every log, with every message that's logged. And so there's already a document there dating to June perhaps, that is ELF-centric, so the logging provider seeded by AT&T, sorry, the logging abstraction seeded by AT&T. And we're producing an updated version of that that adds a couple of metadata items that mean that you can get, you're less reliant on heuristics to analyze what comes out of logging. So you get explicit records for the invocations between components and so on. However, none of those are really externally visible. They require some conventions to be followed in the code, and we're upstreaming some work in that area to make components compliant. The impact is extremely localized, and anything that we're adding, any API changes are purely additive as well, and they're all third party. So does that cover what you want to hear? It's almost like a long-winded way of saying not applicable when it comes to API, when it comes to API stuff.
Sure. Any questions from the team?
Just one quick question to Gildas here. I understand that the log project would be mainly producing some guidelines. I am guessing you are in touch with the documentation team so that you can generate a doc.
Absolutely. So you emailed me about that and I haven't responded yet. And I'm sorry, you're absolutely right. The only reason that I'm not in contact with them is my ignorance. I'm just not in touch with enough people in the project yet. But yeah, I'll reach out to that. You included a guy on that email who I was meant to reach out to. I'll do that. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. That's just me not keeping up with emails at the moment. But yep. You're absolutely right. And I absolutely will. Yeah.
The goal here is to have such kind of documentation in read the docs, and we want to have all the tool chain automated.
Yeah, and I totally agree. So I'm an engineer rather than a documenter, but I'm doing the next iteration of the logging guidelines. I would love to have a professional help, or at least give me feedback, or basically help. So yeah, I'm I love that idea.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Luke. Let's go on next to Varun. Varun, are you available to do DMAP and AAF? I think we lost him.
Hi, this is Sai from AT&T. Varun is joined. I think he's having some audio issues.
Hi, this is Varun. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, hi, I hear you.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. Yep, I'll be giving the presentation on AAF and DMAP. So I will share the screen. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
DMAP, so I will begin with the DMAP. So DMAP is a platform for high-performing and cost-effective data movement services. It transports data between a source and the target. So DMAP has three components. They are message router, data router, and bus controller. Message router is good for messaging, so clients can subscribe and publish to the topics. And data router is good for transmission of files. So it's basically a data file where clients can subscribe to the feeds and also publish to the feeds. And the third component is a bus controller, which is good for provisioning both a message router and data router. So all the three components are exposed as REST API. Let me show you the REST API calls documentation. So DMAP. So these are the message router APIs. So we have APIs for publishing to the topic, subscribing to the topic. And we have provisioning APIs. We also have the admin APIs where we can find what are the consumers of a specific topic. So these are the DMAP APIs, and we have the data router APIs here. So we have a detailed document on what are the APIs for subscribing to a feed and also publishing to a feed. So we have, and also we have the bus control API. I mean, it is in JSON format, but I haven't get the chance to make it viewable, but it is in JSON format. So all the components of DMAP APIs, message router APIs, data router APIs, and bus control APIs are on the wiki page. So everything is exposed as REST API. So in the release R1, we'll be interacting with five projects. So they are the DCAE, Homes, Policy, AFC, and SDN. So as part of the VDNS use case, so the waste collector and the DCAE will publish events to the DMAP topic. And Homes will use the data published by DCAE, which are basically alarms. So the Homes part is part of the VVoLTE use case. And another function of the VVoLTE use case is a restart operation. So policy will be sending the restart VM operation to the DMAP topic, and AFC will use that data to restart a VM. And SDN is also involved in using the DMAP project. And we have also integrated our DMAP project with the application authorization framework. So it supports basic authentication where the user and where the client can send username password to authenticate upon a specific topic. And we are planning to use OEM for deployment. So we are in progress, we are in talks with the OEM team, like how to use Kubernetes for the DMAP deployment. So, and the message router is basically is built on top of Kafka. So any questions on DMAP?
Yeah, it's Gildas here. Again, regarding the dependency, in the project planning, you mentioned you had no incoming dependencies. You mean your DMAP does not rely on any API of other ONAP project. Is that a correct statement?
Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned here DCAE, ORMS policy, APSI, and SDN. Those are the ones who rely on DMAP.
That's right, yeah. So DCAE, HOMES, Policy, APSI, and DCN will use DMAP, so the publish and subscribe to the topics. That's right. And I want to make one correction. The only project will be dependent on is AF. So we are using AF for authentication project. So that's only the one I might want correction on. Oh,
okay. Could you update accordingly then the API incoming dependencies in your project planning?
Sure, I will edit that.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
There's one question. Maybe, Chris, in your architecture discussion, this has come up in the past. The Kafka has some limitation, but for release one, we are okay with Kafka, yeah?
Yes. We're not recommending any changes inside of a project.
So beyond release one, the ONAP is open to new proposals, correct?
Yes. That would be something we'd have to bring up with the projects.
Okay.
What is the limitation Kafka, specific limitation Kafka has? I didn't catch that.
Oh, there are many. For real-time streaming, I guess for release one, we don't care. That's Chris is saying that. Release one, we are okay. But for real-time streaming, there are certain limitations with Kafka. But that is a discussion for a new proposal, new project, yeah?
Okay, makes sense. And a quick question for the DMAP team. So the data router is our own implementation or it's not Kafka-based?
It's our own implementation. It's not Kafka-based.
Any reasons for that?
The architecture team is not here. We can discuss offline. I mean, I can get you in one of your weekly meetings and we can discuss on that.
Sure. Thank you. This is, again, R2 and beyond, and also thinking around how this can be used for, as a broader architecture team for, communicating the cloud, et cetera. Yeah, certainly a topic for discussion for R2.
Okay. And regarding the limitation of Kafka, and can you send me the email afterwards so that we can have a discussion later?
Yeah, for release one, I guess Chris clarified. We are bringing a new proposal, but that's not really for today. Yeah, that's a separate discussion.
Yes, that would be a separate discussion.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So why don't we go into AAF?
Yes. So AAF, so Application Authorization Framework provides both authentication and authorization for the clients. So for the authentication part, right now we support basic auth, and in the future we'll be supporting OAuth. So that will be in part of our release 2. So all the APIs of REST of AAF are exposed using REST API. Let me show you the calls. So we have API for creating a permission for a role, deleting a role, adding a user to a particular role. So everything is documented in the wiki page. Yeah, you can get the permissions of by the type of the element. You can list the permissions in a namespace. So basically, the permissions are of an application are defined using a namespace. So, and we are planning to use OOM for the deployment of AAF on ONAP infrastructure. So currently we integrated AAF with DMAP. So any client who wants to use DMAP can use the basic authentication to publish or subscribe to your core topics. So we are in talks with CLI team on how to use AAF project. So actually, we'll be using our AAF project in release 2. So we'll be collaborating with more projects on AAF in the coming time. Yep, that's all I have.
Great. Any questions? Thank you. Any questions on AAF?
Hey, Chris, this is Parviz. This is basic authentication, yeah, like PAP CHAP kind of authentication, not more complex, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It totally supports basic authentication. Yeah, in future, Unilist 2 will support OAuth. So currently, the development for OAuth is in progress.
And for ONAP, the authentication server is in which component? Or it's an external server, yeah?
Yes, we are in a progress. We are in the process of setting up the external server with Wind River Lab.
Okay.
So we will be setting that this week. The AS server will be available to every ONAP project.
Great. Thank you. Any final questions? Okay, let's go on to Manoop. Manoop for Portal.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you now.
Sorry about that, I was on mute. Let me start with the overview slide just to show how ONAP Portal fits into the overall architecture. Basically, ONAP Portal exposes the design level and operation functionalities that are built by the backend services. And this is the UI through which user can, an admin user or a regular user can access these functionalities based on their roles. So let me go into the details of the portal architecture. From portal to any other components, the only linkage between them is through two fashions. One is SDK-based link, meaning Portal has its own SDK built for any UI-based applications. So, for example, these applications like ASDC, Policy, Vid, these UI-based applications use our Portal's SDK to integrate their UI into Portal. So they implement any interfaces that we have exposed so that they can take leverage of features that are built in the central portal system. So that is one dependency generally any of these partnering applications would have. One is the SDK. In every release, whenever we release a new SDK, they will be upgrading to the new version with the changes that we provide. And the other second version is along with SDK, we also expose a few REST APIs to access the roles, users, and also a few of the services that are provided through the portal. So for these services, they make partnering applications will make calls to those services. Let me show you the list of services that we expose. So from portal system, these are the REST APIs that we expose to get the list of available applications so that an administrator can see the list of applications that are being exposed through portal, and also to add, modify, or remove any user for any of those applications that are partnered with on our portal, and their roles too. All these users, roles, and list of any user roles, all these add, modify, and remove operations can be performed by the administrators. And these APIs are exposed so that any applications that are integrating with owner portal can call the these APIs using the required parameters that are defined here. So these services are also listed in the wiki links where overall ONAP services are being maintained in the format of the table that TSC team has requested with the clear descriptions of what each service would do and their URLs and the parameters that are needed in each of those URLs with the port details. Mostly this is the information that is required for partnering apps like Policy Wade when they're onboarding to portal. Let me go back to these slides. For example, using portal screens, using the application onboarding menu item, any application can be onboarded onto portal. While onboarding, they need these REST service URL and the port details so that they can enter the services that they would be using. So at a high level, these are the details of our architecture, and at the more integration levels, these are the features that we portal is exposing, and partnering applications can take advantage of the single sign-on authorization and also logging level of framework using the SDK that they would integrate. And there is a more granular level of details provided in our development guides for how to integrate portal SDK for any UI-based applications in here. So how to get the SDK and what are the prerequisites for the SDK and how to set up their UI to integrate this. All this is documented here. So I would take any questions that you have for the overall architecture or the API level questions.
Quick question here, Manu Tezigil, again, regarding the dependencies, the API dependencies. In the project planning, you identified only one incoming dependencies, meaning only one project you would rely on the API, which is ANF. It looks to me, I may be wrong, but yeah. It looks to me you rely on more other API, isn't it?
We, like portal application, relies on AAF for this starting this R1 November release because we are planning to integrate with AAF. So that is one incoming dependency.
Correct.
But the outgoing dependencies are for policy, VID, ANAI, SDC. These four applications would require portal's SDK as a artifact. Java artifact. But for APIs, these APIs are like coming from the seed code. They are fully integrated even before OpenEcom. So there is no new changes in these APIs at this point.
Okay. So you mentioned PoDC,
Vid,
SDC,
ANDAI, and SDC. Yes.
So it's four
applications. Yeah.
Okay.
They would depend on our SDK, but as much as possible, we always try to make sure our SDK is backward compatible. Meaning, if for some reason if they are not able to switch from 1.0.0 version to latest version, still our SDK supports them, but only new functionalities they couldn't be using.
Okay. Well, okay. Good. I'm asking because this is not properly documented and kind of a bit lost here. Okay. So I will follow up by email later today. Okay. Thank you, Manup. That helps.
Sure. No problem. Any other questions?
Great. Thank you, Manup. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Next is Gil. Thank you very much for your patience with me. I pushed you off a bit on this, I appreciate it. The floor is yours.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about terminology and how terminology differences and really even scope differences between Etsy and ONAP. Drive architectural differences, and also just review what those architectural differences are. So, can everybody see my screen, or can anyone not see?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So there's an architectural component to what I want to talk about, right? And the bottom line is, We should not be separating the service orchestration from the resource orchestration into two separate distinct layers, two separate distinct components in the ONAP functional architecture. Are we still drawing the functional architecture like this, Chris, as two separate components?
Yes. We haven't made a decision yet how this is going to be implemented in projects. But at this point, we're drawing it separately to help facilitate some of the discussions at the project level about how we map the code.
Okay. So I guess the bottom line, after the proposal, I guess the takeaway will be that we should, if we're going to separate them functionally, because they are functionally different, we need to draw a line around them so that they're clearly part of the same component, two functions in the same component, just like any other component of ONAP. Performs many functions. These, if they are called out at a slide of this level of detail, they shouldn't be called out because other components we don't call out their individual functions. But the bottom line, I'll give you the answer first, is every resource can be exposed as a service, and because of that, and I'm gonna back up that statement. Because of that, we should not draw the components. We should not consider these to be separate components, because what is a resource from one perspective is actually a service from another perspective, and vice versa. So let's move on. So terminology factors into this. I think and maybe this is in some sense a clash of cultures, but two different sets of terminologies coming in. ONAP and Etsy, I think, use the term service in fundamentally the same way, but there is an aspect of service that ONAP considers to be a service, which is not covered by Etsy, which is sort of unknown to Etsy. So when ONAP uses the term serve, well, when Etsy uses the term service, my understanding, and I am not an expert in Etsy, so we can maybe have other folks some way in. They're referring to a network service, like an infrastructure service, and not a customer service. And by the way, the reference I used here is Etsy NFV terminology for main concepts in Etsy. So it seems to me that ONAP includes customer services that ride on top of what Etsy would call a network service. In Etsy seems to, it seems like to me that Etsy considers a network service as always including at least one dedicated VNF, whereas ONAP allows for services that do not include any dedicated VNF. And we'll talk more about that when I get to this. Well, let's do it now. Allotted resource. In ONAP, there's this concept of an allotted resource, which is a, I guess, one thing. So that when ONAP uses the term resource, it uses it from a modeling perspective. Typically, at least when the R is capitalized, it seems to me that when ONAP uses the term resource, it means something specific. It's a modeling concept. It means either a PNF, a VNF, a network, or an allotted resource. Etsy seems to always use the term resource in a lowercase manner. It's using it in a generic sense, resource, etc.
Gil, can I ask a question really quick, or do you want to hold
ahead,
until the end?
Let me finish this slide, Alex, and then at least I get the thought out, and then maybe. So a resource to Etsy, it seems to me, is a VNF or a network. That lines up pretty clearly with what ONAP calls a resource. But I'm not sure about PNF, but certainly I don't see any concept called allotted resource in Etsy. At least it's not discussed. It's not discussed in the manner document. And what is an allotted resource? An allotted resource in the ONAP sense is a resource that's provided by an underlying service. It's a resource that has underneath it a service that's providing that resource. And that resource is allotted from the underlying service to the upper level service, for example, for a customer service, but it doesn't have to be for a customer service. It could be infrastructure. Allotted to a given service instance, an instance of the upper level service. So for example, I think a classic example is a VRF, right? So a VRF, the natural way to model a VRF, I believe, in ONAP would be modeling as an allotted resource, which is provided by a virtual PE router. And the next slide, I'm going to talk through that, but Alex, your question first. Alex still with us? That was Alex who had a question, wasn't it?
Yes. Alex, you still there?
I'm still here. I was just waiting. So on the model that you have on this page, is it that abstract? You essentially modeling an object called a PNF, a VNF, a network, and an allotted resource, or is it just an aggregation of other things?
My understanding is that in SDC, when they use the term R, capital R resource, at least there are other resources that are modeled in SDNC, you know, like on virtual machines, et cetera. But there is a different term we use, and if somebody from SDNC is on the call, for these four, these are capital R resources. So I might not have answered your question, though.
I think you kind of did. And then another question was on the previous slide. When you talk about combining together service orchestration and resource orchestration, I guess just trying to understand your notion of the layering. So we've got infrastructures that might be based on public clouds in the future, like Amazon or, you know, Azure and other things. And so clearly, the resource orchestration is going to be kind of part of that layer, right? Talking about higher order resource orchestration in terms of just instantiating things when we're creating a network service instance?
Yep. So at the end, we can, since we have time, we can get to that level of detail. At the back of this deck, which I put on the contributions page. I think that was the name of this one. But anyway, I've got flow diagrams that represent, you know, the generic, here's what a generic service level process would look like. Here's what a generic resource level process would look like for an allotted resource. Actually, no, I'm sorry, not for a allotted resource. Well, I'm sorry, let me go back up here. I probably confused you because I wasn't reading my own slide. I have a generic service level process, which is implemented, by the way, in ONAP today. There is a generic service level process flow in ONAP that we're leveraging for a BCP use case. There's a generic VNF level resource. There's a generic resource level process which handles VNFs. And by generic, I mean it wasn't implemented. This Komunda flow was not implemented with any given VNF in mind. It was implemented for VNFs in general, and it's driven from the model. The model that comes out of SDNC drives the specific behavior for a given VNF type. And I've also got a flow for a generic resource level, the generic resource level flow for networks. So when I use the term resource, I'm using it in this sense, the functions. And I've got a higher level view than this. But I've also got the VCP use case sequence diagrams back. I've got the VCPE model we're using, as well as the allotted, which includes actually allotted resource and a PNF and a VNF, and also several networks.
And how does resource optimization fit into this?
So resource, when you say resource, you mean like the homing or like optimizing placement of where the workloads run.
All of the above, yes.
Yep. So as part of service level, the generic service level processing, one of the most important things the service level flow does is when it receives a request for an instance, give me an instance of this service. The generic service level flow is you know spun up, and a UUID an instance, the instance object is created in ANAI, which at that moment is just a placeholder really. One of the most important things that happened next though is decomposition. You take that ONAP, the service level flow is responsible for taking that service model, looking and seeing what does that service, what type resources that service comprised, and doing that recursively. It must do that recursively all the way down, and we'll talk more about that because we haven't quite gotten to the nub of my point yet. But and then after decomposition takes place, that entire structure, all of the resources and sub-resources, from sub-services, et cetera, all of that would be passed into homing in release two, into homing in release one for VCPE is just done internally.
Okay.
And then an optimization is done holistically.
Okay, that was actually a question I had for the optimization framework, guys, and I'm glad that you're passing the entire graph because you can't really do much optimization unless you know the topology of the entire service.
That's right. You can't do piecemeal. Yep.
So I understand.
So let me talk a bit more about a lot of resources. I gave the example of a VPE. So a VPE, virtual provider edge router, it provides certain functionality, right? I mean, it provides routing functionality. It also is reasonable to model it as a service, right? So if a service provider wants to have their capacity planners say, oh, I want a VPE over here in this data center, in this cloud region, then they would want to go to an ONAP screen. They'd want to select something from the screen and say, give me one of these over there, right? Instantiate that. The way we would model that in ONAP, at least from AT&T's perspective, the way we'd model that in ONAP is we would model the VPE as being a part of a larger service, which might include the networking that surrounds it in this case, called, let's say, a VPE infrastructure service. And you can instantiate, you can get instances of VPE infrastructure service deployed places, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that is a service, right? So that's an infrastructure service. Now, also, I can offer services on top of that. I can give customers VERF. I can have Coca-Cola and Pepsi, you know, could come in each and ask for an AVPN service or a layer 3 VPN customer service, right? We also want to be able to model that in ONAP. I don't think Etsy considers what I just said, the VERF, as being something that's part of the Etsy scope.
You're right, but that's where we bring in the MEF framework, and they're the ones that are modeling that type of service.
So yeah, I was gonna wait until I said that, but a lot of what you're saying, Gil, I agree with Chris. Yeah. A lot of what you're saying is expressed in the MEF framework, and we need to synchronize our watches there because we've been assuming that some of these concepts you're talking about we would just borrow from MEF.
Okay. So I need to read up on MEF. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chris.
So I can queue that up for next week. We can include
that'd be good.
MEF as well.
Okay.
This is Amanda. So this is Amanda from Huawei. So I want to just clarify what the mention has actually already been covered by Etsy in the release 2. Actually, the resource, not only the NVI, not only VMS, but also the resource can be network service, so it can be recursive network service. So we have a composed network service, also have nasty network service. So that means from your example, actually already covered by Etsy, which is two.
So it's also ONAP, right? So it sounds like it is a common, maybe it's just a terminology issue then. That would be good, because then it's just a matter of us, you know, calling something instead of calling it a lottery resource, calling it something else, that would be fine. We need to align the terminology.
And service is such a challenging term because it's used differently in a telco domain versus the IT domain. And is this the thing that you provide to the customer, or is this the thing that's offered internally that composes the thing that you provide to the customer?
If it's recursive, it's both, right? Yeah. I would argue that it's both.
It is both. And in fact, you kind of want to have an abstract service class that you can specialize into other things that are of the same ilk. But and I would argue that, you know, we could apply the same approach for resources as well. You know, there's, you know, everything is a service, everything is a resource. You can specialize and you know, add additional adornments to a generic resource, call it something else. But I'm not sure there's a, when you said allotted, I actually thought you were going to talk about desired and minimum set of resources. And you know, from that perspective, right? You know, we
use the term allotted only because this concept came out of like the VERF example, where you have multiple. Typically, you would have multiple allotted riding on a single instance of your lower level service, and so we thought of what each higher order service is getting is an allotment, but there's absolutely nothing that would prevent you from doing this in a one-to-one way either. And I think that's what Volta use case is doing.
Yeah. And Chris,
a more interesting example to consider is something like an allotted resource of 4G capability coverage. That's something that's tricky to map.
I have a question actually. Okay, so when we say customer service, what is customer service that we are trying to say here actually?
The product, I think, in the MEF terminology is what we're saying.
Well, okay, I'm not sure. So product, so it's recursive, right? So I would hate to give the higher order service a different unique name than the lower level service. They're all relative, which we'll get to.
So I'm asking this question because, okay, if you see the TM forum concept, okay, what they say, there is a layered architecture where there is a product, there is a service, and there is a resource. Okay.
But this is different. So this is different. Yes. So go ahead, keep going.
I just want to map where this customer service fit into that definition of product, service, and resource of TM forum.
So I'm not sure if I'm using the Etsy terminology of product, but to me, product is a billing is a business construct, right?
It's not, it is something that is It is something that we offer to customer through a catalog, which is having some price associated with it.
Yeah. In any service which is exposed to a customer that can be sold has to have a view on it, which is business, you know, a business view, right? Pricing and things. None of that should be an ONAP. So I would argue that product is a concept that would be totally foreign to ONAP.
Exactly. Now that's clear. Thank you. Now we'll come to the product to the service. Okay, so when we build a product would consist of multiple services which can be combined together and offered as a product to the customer. Okay, and when we say end-to-end service from the customer perspective, then that customer end-to-end service can be broken down into multiple services. Okay, the small service components. Okay, now where is that fitting into this architecture?
It fits right here, right? So I mean, so we can get to the recursive view, right? So I mean, this is truly recursive, right? You could have a service which is comprised of a subservice, you know, because my slide could only fit one dimension. Certainly, this could fan out, right? I could have one service which is comprised of multiple levels at the next layer down, and it could fan out, you know, exponentially.
In answer to your question about where does it applies at the level of scope that the ONAP instance is managing.
This, by the way, what you're proposing, Gil, is pretty much maps one-to-one to the Tosca meta model, right, where you have... Mm-hmm. Which is actually pretty cool and pretty important if we're going to eventually, you know, consume Tosca templates the way they ought to be.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize, definitely that's an important thing, but we should definitely emphasize this is exactly, you know, part of the Tosca profile and supports that natively, the ability to do that cascading and, you know, let the application developers decide how the application, what are the constructs and the building blocks of the application, and essentially let, you know, the users or service providers or the consumers of that, you know, not the consumers, but the designers decide which node types to consume.
Exactly.
I wouldn't get too tied up on customer service versus because they depend on the perspective you're looking at the service from.
Yeah, actually, I was trying to elaborate on that actually further. I was trying to see, okay, let us assume a broadband service. Okay, that is a customer, a broadband product that is a customer is being offered. And we are talking about retail customer here. Okay, now broadband is a whole as a product being offered to the customer. Now, when
so we how about this? How about this? I'm sorry, just in the interest of time, can we go through the real example, the real broadband use case? And I can go through exactly how these concepts map out into that.
Yes.
Okay. Let me first make the point I wanted to make, which is an architectural point about the separation of resource and service into two different components, which I think is a bad idea. So let me say one thing about what Alex said about Tosca, right? So the way we model our allotted resources is we model the association between the allotted resource and Tosca in the service, which allots it, if you will, in our terminology is through a requirement capability. So if a underlying service, and notice that infra here, there's not two different types of service in our mind, right? Customer services, infrastructure services. Customer service is only the name of this service. These are both services. Whether it's infra or customer, it doesn't matter. I mean, ONAP doesn't care whether it's customer or infra, because that's really a question of, are we billing for it? And ONAP doesn't care about that, right? ONAP just cares about this is a service. It needs to be managed as a service. So in this example, the lower level service exposes a capability called the VERF capability. It's the VPE lower level, VPE infra lower level service exposes a VERF capability, which is, oh, by the way, the capability that the VERF allotted resource requires. And that VERF allotted resource is the primary and actually the only resource component in the layer 3 VPN service. So in that example, we've already talked about the recursion. I'm not going to go through this, right? So you could fan out, right? I could define first what you would do. First, what you would do in ONAP is you would onboard your VNFs. You would then define your service, you know, which could be comprised of PNFs, multiple one or more PNFs, networks, VNFs, a lot of resources if you want. You've got that defined. Now, when a service provider who's defined that lower level service, if you will, wants to construct a higher level service, they just use, they create the higher level service, give it an allotted resource, and they have the requirement match the capability.
Yes, sorry, I tend to agree with this. If we agree that yes, everything can be a service, so service on this level, even customer service can be a resource for higher layers, then it's okay. We cannot.
I think one way to maybe, so Gil, would you agree that you know, when you started talking about views, it occurred to me that whatever these quote unquote things are, you can project a service-centric view on them or a resource-centric view on them. Really, that depends on what set of interface endpoints you want to be able to leverage, right? You know, I can call it, you know, I don't know what to call it, so I'm going to call it a thing for now, or a managed object or an on-app object or something. But, you know, a service is really a view, so is a resource, so is a business service view, so is whatever else you want to impose on it. It's just how you manipulate that particular thing, quote unquote, from given that particular view, right?
Well, I agree with the words you said, but I'm not quite sure. So as long as we agree that this has to be model driven, right? So there has to be a way. So what I'm going to go through is, actually, I haven't talked through from this slide, right? So when you go into ONAP today and you define a service, which is comprised of four resources, which one of which is a lottery resource, which leverages these lower level resources, then what you get by doing that modeling is you get a serve when a request comes in to instantiate this top level service. What happens is a top-level service orchestration flow is instantiated, which starts decomposing this, and then it decomposes this too. The top level does. It takes care of decomposing all the way down. Then it spawns subflows at the resource level, which then, in turn, could spawn service-level flows.
But you can also spawn service flows from service orchestration as well, right? My service is composed of other services, then why would I?
You could. So, I mean, so you're saying, so what I'm describing is what's there, Alex. I'm not describing what should be there. So you're right. You could in some, we could maybe get rid of this concept of allotted resource. So for the Volte use case, if this is a dedicated service, if this is a dedicated service and instance, so this one instance of this is going to be used by exactly one instance of this of the higher level, and it's not shared, then really the allotted resource structure, I think, construct, I think you're saying, may be not necessary. And, yes, and I would agree that that's true.
But that resource, that structure has the advantage of you, when it comes to deployment, you have an abstraction option there by maybe deploying a higher level service orchestration and leave the service Y in a different orchestration instance and create an abstraction between them if it needed.
There's a difference. There's also a difference between, you mentioned sharing. So let's say we have a database and we want to be able to share it, right? The same instance between multiple high order services. There's a difference between instantiating something or activating something, right? In some sense, you know, the database is already instantiated. It's already running. You're just adding, you know, a particular set of tables or schemas or whatever you need to from your top-level service perspective to it, right?
Right, exactly.
So in essence, it's the difference between building up something from scratch versus procuring something as a service from somewhere else.
That's right. And one thing that should be interesting, one of the things we did in AT&T with one of our services, because with network function virtualization, there's absolutely no reason why you could not deploy your lower level services on a demand basis, which what we did. Mm-hmm. So we had a case where a customer service request comes in, we decompose it, we find out that, given the customer is in California and given, you know, the latency requirements that our Sniro homing function has, there are no instances of the lower level thing available for this allotted resource that we had in this other service I'm describing. So we fired up a new instance on demand, which didn't mean that this lower level thing was owned by the top level service. because all this top level service had was an allotment of that lower level service. This was a second service. So in other words, if the customer had canceled their top level service instance and no longer wanted it, this lower level would not go away because there might have been other instances that came in. Now that there is an instance of this in California, you know, maybe others come in and camp on it as well. So that's the practical example of how a service orchestration flow can drive another service orchestration flow. But the way we did it is through the resource level flow for the allotment. That's all we had built so far.
Mm-hmm. So any service consumed by another service is an allotted resource, basically.
Currently it is, yeah. Now, I agree that that is sort of, for a one-to-one instance like we talked about, Alex, I think that's a little convoluted perhaps. Maybe we can optimize it. But if it's a one-to-many, you know, if it's one lower-level instance for many upper-level instances, the allotment is how we modeled that.
Yeah.
So that gets into the multi-tenancy discussion that we've been circling around but haven't actually tackled yet.
It also depends on the life cycle relationship between the dependencies. So I guess the allotted resources there mainly for cases where you have the life cycle of the lower level service is not necessarily tied to the higher.
So one thing we may want to do is consider introducing a notion of a quote unquote service container into the picture. If for no other reason is to build an abstraction layer between the resources allotted to a service and the set of services that consume them, right? Because you can have a many-to-many relationships, but you still want to be able to have an abstract point of control across a set of things. I think Tosca kind of has a similar notion as part of the meta model, right? When they build a container tree.
So Tosca has built this exact notion using a few features, a combination of requirements capabilities and also using substitution mapping. So yes. What Tosca supports is, you know, say, you know, service Y is a meta service, and we use substitutable node type that you can consume as part of the service X that you have here in the model, and you can do, you know, can do as many levels as you'd like as part of the Tosca meta model and part of the Tosca DSL. So Tosca supports this natively. What this notion, I really obviously really like this notion. What comes to my mind is, you know, what we would need to enable as part of ONAP to support, you know, this capability as part of ONAP. Like which projects would we have to make support this use case?
So we actually, this is existing functionality that I'm describing in ONAP, and in the VCPE use case is going to be leveraging it. And let make sure we have time to get to that. I think we already talked about the recursion, right? So this is a leftover. The recursion. So this could go as deep as you want. One thing that, you know, which is very attractive. I mean, recursion is very attractive, right? So one question is, hey, look, you know, if I'm a service provider, I define a lower level service, and then I define an upper level service, and another one, and, you know, at runtime, if I get a request in at the upper level, then I'm going to have in deep nested orchestration flows all running, you know, recursively down. And if there's a failure, you know, maybe that it should work, right? I mean, there's absolutely no reason it's recursive, right? But you know, it is somewhat complex. So I think ONAP should let the service providers decide, and this is a point I made on the Volte use case, let the service providers decide between whether to be, service providers should not be forced to do nesting this way, to have a service, you know, rely on another service. Another way that would be reasonable that you could do this is through design time nesting, where I could define a lower level service, which is consumed by an upper level service all the way through, but at design time and through substitution mapping, you know, that's how I get my reuse. But at runtime, you end up with a flat model, you know, which is another
thing. At runtime, you would still need to say that there's a dependency between those design time components, those little Lego blocks that you build at design time, right? So I could
The difference between these two, Alex, is that at least when the way it works today, the way ONAP works today, is that when you have an allotted resource instance, let me go to the VCP use case. When I have an allotted resource instance, then when I have an allotted resource in, it just needs something, right? What shows up in inventory is an instance for that allotted resource. So this is the VCP use case deck, right? So I've got a VCPE residential customer service instance, which is comprised of a dedicated VNF, a dedicated PNF, and a dedicated allotted resource, if that makes a dedicated allotted resource isn't a mixture in term. But that allotted resource comes out of, is given by this VGMUX infrastructure service instance. And this association is a preservation of the mapping. This says that, hey, look, this customer has a slice of a tunnel, a slice called a tunnel XCON allotted resource, and it's a slice of this. Now, the difference with what I with this model and what I did with the substitution mapping is through substitution mapping, there would not be an instance in ANAI for these intermediate services. These are all design time concepts, at least the way I've got this represented here.
Oh, I see. So I see. You're assembling. Okay, got it.
So it's a design. So so if a service provider wants a flat, you know, because hey, it's easier to troubleshoot flatness than it is recursion in deep, then we should support an ONAP this capability through design time substitution. We should also continue to support the runtime recursive approach. And then they could do a mix and match, right? So they might say, hey, look, you know, well, this is getting a little too deep. Maybe I should flatten levels 3 and 4 or whatever.
But do you really care if the orchestrator can handle all this?
So theoretically, no. No, because, I mean, any failure down here, theoretically, no. I don't care if the orchestrator can handle all this, but troubleshooting and just, you know, when things go wrong and bad things happen to even good systems, some service providers might be a little,
okay,
you know.
And are you assuming a double pass through this hierarchy here? First to reserve whatever you need and then to allocate it all, or, you know, more like an airline reservation system, or are you doing this in a single pass? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, today what we do in, I can only speak to AT&T's eComp. What we do in eComp is when we do our homing, when the service level flow calls SNIRO with the entire decomposed structure through all the levels, you know, all the way down. SNIRO does an optimization, and it chooses cloud zones, it chooses lower-level infrastructure instances to leverage, and yes, it does call the controller at that time, because SNIRO doesn't know about capacity. It relies on the controller to tell about capacity. So SNIRO does an optimization based upon latency and things like that, and then it comes up with the set of possible solutions to the problem. Then it calls the controller and says, okay, here's a possible solution I'm looking for. Here's the workload I'm planning on giving you. Can you support this through this now? And if the answer comes back from SNIRO from the controller that yes, it's supported, there is capacity, at that point in time, SNIRO would do a reservation.
And then only if all the resources were available, it would actually allocate them, right?
That's right, exactly. Yeah, only after homing is complete, it would allocate them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. All right. So let me give the summary. I promised somebody that we would make it through the VCP use case. Let me try to do that. But conclusions, right? So service providers require the ability to define services that can be leveraged by higher order services. That's the bottom line. My main point here is that we should not separate service orchestration, resource orchestration into two separate named components. So clearly, I believe we should separate them into two different functions, right? I mean, they are two different functions. They're two different actors in a sequence diagram, but they should not be two different named components, because a service, what is, you know, what appears as a service from one, a resource from one service's perspective may actually be a service from another's perspective. Mm-hmm. You would not want this recursion to go back and forth across name components, I don't believe. It should be part of the same framework, the same component, two functions within the same component. So ONAP, so this is wrong. I think we established that customer services is part of Etsy under the MEF, which I was just ignorant of. And ONAP should provide service providers the ability to model their reuse. This is the last point I made, you know, to drive either, you know, or to allow a separate thread for each level of the reuse, or to allow the service provider to flat through substitution mapping to come up, or a combination thereof. You know, they should, service provider should have that option.
Okay.
So what is stopping us from building an end-to-end orchestrator that is, you know, takes Tosca templates or, you know, with substitution mappings or whatnot, and then spits out a service instance?
I think just time. We have built it. We built some of that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to suggest for you to take some time, and obviously I will happily to take part of this to review what we've done with ARIA. We, you know, as part of ARIA, we've been supporting similar scenarios. I think it would be good, you know, to at least see what's going on there, to see how this maps to the proposal here.
Arthur, do you want to take an action item and do a presentation on one of the upcoming calls? I'll be happy to reserve a slot for you.
Sure.
I think it would be useful, Arthur, because we're talking about a lot of the existing ARIA capabilities.
We're actually using ARIA in the VCP use case, but not for the whole. There are some challenges, particularly with using ARIA for the whole solution, as I just described it, but we can talk about that when Arthur does his presentation.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
So do I have time, Chris, just to go through and fulfill my promise to just go through quickly the VCP use case?
Yes, we still have a few minutes.
Okay, so in the VCPE use case, and I'm updating the wiki right now, so if you go to the wiki page right now, you won't see the flows and get ready to share with you, but you should by the end of today or at least tomorrow. So there are some infrastructure services, which are sort of generic, AAA, et cetera. They're in pink. Also in pink are some VNFs that are used by the supporting actors in the customer's service. But there's one in particular of VGMUX that needs to be configured on a per instance basis. Now the green stuff is the per customer instance. So the pink stuff is the infrastructure. It's deployed in advance. The customer, when a customer orders residential broadband service, they would get a BRG, a physical box, a PNF, sent to their residence. They would get a dedicated VG, VNF, but what also must be selected as part of our homing in order to get this customer service is the VGMUX from which this VG, which is yet to be instantiated, off which this VG will hang. And in choosing that VGMUX, we are consuming capacity of that VGMUX that must be tracked. In addition, we must configure that VGMUX for this customer service instance to provide a cross connect between the BRG and the VG. So really I could draw, and one time I had drawn, a little green oval inside the VGMUX because that is the allotted resource. Now when you look at the modeling from a Tosca perspective, the way we model this is we model the VGMUX as an infrastructure service, which provides a VGMUX, which is comprised of a VGMUX, which is a VNF, as well as the network between the MUX and the in the VG. This LAN over here between the MUX and the VG is a network that is dedicated to the VG MUX. And so we're also going to instantiate that network as part of this service instance. So when you get a new VG, I'm sorry, when you get a new VG MUX, when capacity planners say, give me a new VG MUX over here, they actually go to ONAP and they say, give me a VG MUX infra service instance, which spins up the VNF as well as the support network.
So Gil, from a Tosca perspective, you would be introducing a whole bunch of node types, right, to represent the CPU use case.
That's right. That's right.
And do you believe that there's a way to come up with a generic set of node types that we could propose as part of the Tosca TC?
So to me, I mean, service, PNF, VNF, allotted resource network are the ones that we primarily work with.
And you believe that those are generic enough to accommodate anything?
Well, I mean, we believe it as far as my headlights shine. I've been working too long, Alex, to trust my future. But I mean, that's my current sense. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Yes, I get it. I wasn't looking for a definitive answer like that, but
yeah.
But your thinking is that this will be good enough. Is basically what I'm.
Seems like it. Yeah. It seems like it's good enough.
All right. To take, yeah. We should get together offline and talk about that some more, because several of us are involved in the definition of the NFV profile in Tosca, and we would want to see if we could amend the node types maybe to include some of these more generic ones.
Okay, cool. Let's let the dust, because I'm not sure whether allotted resource, certainly let's make sure the ONAP community as a whole, you know, settles on this. But I think once we have as an ONAP community, I think this certainly could be used. As a generic, I would love to see it be used to influence Tosca. So the VCP customer service, we're modeling it as the allotted resource, which has a requirement for this tunnelized con capability, which is a capability which is exposed by the VG MUX infra service and a PNF resource and a VG VNF resource. The flows are in the deck, which I posted to the contributions page, so you can see the service, the VCP rescust service level processing for release one. You can see the tunnel excon allotted the allotted resource level processing. You can see the VNF processing and the PNF processing. Okay, that's it. I think, unless there's some questions.
Great.
I'm happy with this. Thank you. Actually, I will tell you, my confusion was mostly related to the, when you said in one of the conclusion slides that service R to support the issues of the first point, the second point, which where you have mentioned defined leverage a higher order services. Now this makes sense actually, okay, because I was just worried actually. What is service that we are trying? Now I'm very clear about it. That is a good point actually. And further to this, your second point, service orchestration and resource orchestration, is two separate name components, which I think indirectly what you are trying to say, I understand that you are seeing it current completely, because we are going to leverage both these capabilities at the higher level. Okay, and which is very correct. I'm happy with this. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yes, thank you, Gil. This is good.
Thank you. I think this was a thought-provoking presentation. You clearly raised some of the issues that we're having with terminology, and I agree, you know, as we go across the different frameworks, the terminology is different, and I think that you're right that it is causing confusion here. What I heard from this discussion is that it's raised at least three more presentations for the next call or so, however long it takes us to get through it. Let's keep the discussion going. I think this was useful. A logistical point, our next call is next Tuesday. It's right after Labor Day. I hope everybody can still join us.
I would like to suggest one thing more. If you think, then you can consider the TM forum also, what they're trying to say from the
service, or you can say service concept actually. That will be good because that maps somehow to some of the things that we are talking here, but that could be good actually. So,
Great. Thank you. We can queue that up as well. So we have a lot to talk through. And I think this was a good presentation. And I also thank the project teams who came to do their walkthroughs today. Thank you all. We are at the bottom of the hour. We've got about 3 minutes left, so I'm going to let everybody go just a couple of minutes early because I don't think we can get another topic in anytime. So thank you, and we'll talk next week.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.